Leslie Marshall. Good evening and welcome to the only true democracy and talk radio of for and by you, the people. In this hour, hour two on Tuesday evenings, my co-host is Mark Levine for the Inside Scoop portion of the Leslie Marshall Show. We're going to do that in this hour. And then next week, it moves to Thursday's hour two right here. Same bat time, same bat channel, just on Thursdays instead of Tuesday's hour two. My co-host in this hour, the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show, was a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He currently hosts the Washington-based radio television show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. Also, he appears on television just like I do on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Business, and CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his co-host on Pacifica on the left. More than a pleasure to have in the house my co-host and my friend, my fellow lib, Mark Levine. Mark, good evening. A belated happy 4th after the fact. Hope you had a good vacation.
Good evening. I had a terrific 4th. I went down to the mall in Washington, D.C., which I've done virtually every year since I've been here. It's a terrific thing. Everyone gets together. It's, I don't know, it's just wonderful to see. It's a great day to be patriotic, right? There's no differences, Republicans, Democrats, on that day. We're all there together, so it's a great thing.
I would agree with you. Years ago, I had the fortunate opportunity of seeing fireworks in D.C. once in my life. They're pretty spectacular.
They are.
The backdrop of, you know, you have the monument and Lincoln Memorial and the lights and the reflection off the Potomac and the amount of people on the mall and the White House and all the lights and the beautiful warm summer nights where the humidity is welcome, right? It's actually beautiful. I've been very lucky.
It really is. And it's
I have a trivia question for you before we start on our topic tonight, because I know you like things like this. What city, because I was shocked, is the testing ground for fireworks for all other cities in the U.S.?
I do not know the answer to that question. I would guess something like Las Vegas, where there's a desert and a lot of empty space. I really don't know.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
You're kidding.
I'm not Cincinnati. Kidding. My husband did one. Yeah, my husband did his fellowship, one of his three fellowships in Cincinnati, and he lived in Mount Adams, which is up on a hill in a very flat city in a very flat state, and terrain-wise, and I remember somebody in the building said, "Oh, you're so lucky that your husband lives in this building," because I was living in Chicago and just seeing him, you know, like every other weekend kind of thing, or every weekend, depending on who wanted to drive or fly. And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, in this building, every apartment has like two chairs in a little space, almost the size of a New York studio. And, you know, off of 4th of July." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, great." And my husband and I are like, "Big deal. So we'll go up on the roof 4th of July." And then we found out that Cincinnati has incredible fireworks, because they have fireworks you may never see anywhere else that are tested. If they're too expensive, they don't work out so well, but you get to see them. And I have to say, I was pretty blown away and I was amazed. No offense, but I was amazed that I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, of all places. So
I had no idea. I'll tell you this, though. I can't speak for Cincinnati. I always thought that we in D.C. had the best fireworks in the nation. It is an incredible display. And if
yes,
any of your listeners want to come join us on the mall on July 4th, it lasts like a half hour.
Yeah.
It's just thousands and thousands. It's just purely for the fireworks. It's an incredible display.
Tax dollars hard at work. Now, I have to say,
exactly.
I'm sorry. There is one that I think kicks Washington's butt, and I'm a little partial, and that's Boston. And let me tell you why. You have the actual Boston Pops playing, and when they play the overture, dun 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 dun, well, the booms, they actually light real cannons.
Yes, I know. You forget. I used to go to school in Boston.
Right,
right. The Esplanade. I remember the Charles River, and it is a terrific display.
It is a terrific. You still think that? You still think DC's good?
I still think Washington's a little better.
And you know, New Yorkers are going to say, "Are you kidding me?" With the Statue of Liberty in the background, and the New Yorkers and the international crowd. Are you kidding me? Which is also pretty tremendous. Although I have to say, LA, cute and great for the toddlers. It was honestly 10 minutes. 10 minutes.
Aw, that's all.
Well, in L.A., there's so many firework displays because it's so spread out, so it's a little confusing. Oh, anyway, Mark, I want to talk about something that may end up having quite the firework display and not in a good way. And we're talking about the trial of George Zimmerman tonight, and I'm so glad. I knew that you were on, but before I knew you were going to talk about, I was watching some of this while waiting to go on Fox today, and then when I got off, just bits and pieces. And I've talked to people both left and right. I've talked to legal people and non-legal people as well. And the general consensus seems to be that George Zimmerman probably will not be convicted, of either murder or manslaughter. I know that Dan Abrams has done an analysis and written about that. First of all, do you agree with that analysis? It seems to be from people, regardless of their political background, that it just doesn't seem that there's enough proof for those six women to say guilty of murder or manslaughter.
I agree he won't be convicted of murder. I don't think there's enough evidence there. I think there's enough reasonable doubt there. That concerns me because I do think he was out looking for trouble that night, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, I'm sure. I think manslaughter is still possible. He may not be convicted of anything. I actually think there's a decent shot. In fact, if I had to predict, and it's a close prediction here, but even though the evidence seems to have been favored to the defense most of the trial, I think he can still be convicted of manslaughter. So if you push me, I'm going to guess that. I'm going to guess he'll be convicted of manslaughter. But I'll tell you this, I'd be less surprised if he's acquitted than if he's convicted of murder. I really don't think he'll be convicted of murder. He may well be acquitted, but I'll put my money slightly on the manslaughter.
Let's talk about first why you don't think he'll be convicted of murder.
I don't think he'll be convicted of murder because, first of all, you have to remember you always get a reasonable doubt. As a criminal defendant, we decide purposely to let guilty people go free rather than put innocent people in jail. So the burden of proof, the heavy burden of proof in any criminal case, is on the prosecution, and it is a heavy burden, and that's our system. And, you know, in some cases, I don't like it because I heard all the 911 tapes, and there's no doubt in my mind that George Zimmerman was looking for trouble that night. He was a cop, a wannabe cop. He was a self-proclaimed neighborhood watch. You know, people don't walk around with a gun in their shorts, you know, looking around their neighborhood unless they're looking for trouble, literally. So I'm no fan of George Zimmerman, and I've said so on the air. But as I go through the evidence at the trial, you know, the testimony of that neighbor, it may have been only 8 or 10 seconds, but he's confident that Trayvon Martin was on top and pummeling him. And now, that contradicts the medical examiner, which says that his wounds were relatively insignificant. So they could find for either side. But there's enough evidence there, because remember, if you have a reasonable doubt, you're supposed to acquit. If you're in the middle, see, in a civil trial, which I've done a lot of, I've only done one criminal trial in my life, I have to admit, but I was a civil trial lawyer for many years, and all you have to do is win by what they call the preponderance of the evidence. You need 51%. If you believe me more than the other guy, we win. If you believe the other guy more than me, they win. But that's not the standard in a criminal case. You have to say there's no reasonable doubt in my mind that he's guilty. And I don't think they can find that for murder, because even if he was looking for trouble, he clearly was not looking. The reason why it's not first-degree murder, he was clearly intending to kill someone that night. But the question is whether in the middle of what they were up to, he intended to kill him. And I just don't think murder is possible.
Yeah, because you can't prove the premeditation. You know, absolutely right. I want to talk about why you do think there's a possibility of a guilty plea with manslaughter for Zimmerman. And I say that because almost everybody I've talked to said they just don't think there's enough evidence there for a conviction on that. But murder, certainly, they agree with you, but manslaughter either.
Well, first of all, I want to be clear. So premeditation is required for first-degree murder. He's being charged with second-degree murder. First-degree murder, you have to sort of be planning in advance.
Yeah.
And, you know, second-degree murder, you do have to have an intention to kill, but they don't usually use the word premeditated because you can create that intention in a moment. Like, oh, this guy I'm having a fight with, I'm going to kill him, and then 10 seconds later you kill him. That's good enough for second-degree murder and not first-degree murders. But we don't usually call that premeditation. Premeditation, we think of the cold-blooded killer who plots and stalks his victims and things like that. Anyway, to answer your question, I don't know, and you know, the evidence certainly has been more pro-defense than I expected. I must say that, but I do think that the 911 tapes that I heard show someone who was looking for trouble that night, and I don't think people want to reward his behavior. So a lot of times in a jury room, you have compromises, and voluntary manslaughter, which I think he's still may well be convicted of, doesn't require sort of an intent to kill someone. What requires is reckless conduct that leads to someone's death. And I think he was reckless that night. Let me give you an example. Voluntary manslaughter would be shooting a gun up in the air. and not caring where the bullet falls, and then it falls and kills a child. Okay, that's voluntary manslaughter. You didn't intend to kill the child, but you shot your gun up in the air, and that was reckless and stupid, and a kid died. That standard, I think, can be met, because I think he was reckless and stupid, and someone died. And we'll talk about how self-defense plays into all of this, because it's a tricky thing. But in general, I think, based on what I've seen, voluntary manslaughter may well be the conviction. We'll find out.
When you talk about what you just said and the way you presented it, that made me think the way it is presented before deliberating by the judge, correct? How much does that weigh in? Because if you presented it just like you did with what you said, almost in a 1-2 sentence summation regarding how they would arrive at second degree murder versus how they would arrive at manslaughter, I would say if it's presented that way, it's more likely that the 6-person jury would convict him of manslaughter the way that you presented it. But if the judge doesn't present it that way, I think it's quite possible that they would not find him guilty of manslaughter.
Well, I think the judge will present it that way with second-degree murder and manslaughter. Of course, the judge is not going to give the example I gave of shooting gun up in the air. You can't do that the way I did. She would say, you know, voluntary manslaughter means that you acted recklessly with conscious disregard for what would happen and somebody died because of what you did. She can't give the example I gave. But I think she'll basically give very close to the instruction that I explained to you. But there's one more element we've got to talk about that's the essential element of the case, and that's the question of self-defense. Because this trial is all about self-defense. No one disputes that George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin. The question is whether he acted in self-defense, and that's the heart of the case, whether he had objectively reasonable grounds to believe his life was in imminent danger or he would suffer great bodily harm. But it's further complicated by the fact that there's reasonable doubt on this. So you want to say it's objectively reasonable. At the same time, if there's a doubt, you still find for the defendant. So it's tricky, but self-defense is the heart of the case.
How much time do we have, Mark, before the break? Because I have so many questions on this. Let me ask. You had mentioned that the evidence thus far has been so pro-defense, and you also talked about how you think the tapes show George Zimmerman's mindset regarding this individual, this community, etc. Let's first talk about the tapes. I want you to share with the listeners tonight specifically what in the tapes show what in the character or what lacking in the character of George Zimmerman.
Okay, so when I first heard this case, all I had were the 911 tapes. What's coming out at trial is stuff I didn't know regarding the 30 seconds to a minute or whatever it was, 2 minutes of confrontation between them. And that's the part that, unfortunately, it would be he said, except Trayvon Martin's dead. So we only get Zimmerman's side if he testifies, or we get all these neighbors and witnesses and stuff like that. That's the part that I think has come out pretty good for the defense. The part that I'm talking about happened before the incident, where you hear the 911 tapes, where you hear George Zimmerman calling. I'm not the ones where he called 911 and he says, there's a guy, he looks like he's up to no good, these guys always get away, and the dispatcher says, are you following him? And he says, yeah. And the dispatcher says, we don't need you to do that. You go back to your car and wait for further instruction. All those things, to me, suggest this isn't a guy out for a neighborhood stroll. This is a guy who put his gun in his shorts and was looking for trouble, how I put it. And so, to me, he has the mindset of someone who's looking for trouble. You know, if you walk around the neighborhood and suddenly someone jumps you, you have a very different mindset from walking around the neighborhood looking carefully at every bush, waiting for something to rustle, and you're jumpy. And people who are jumpy tend to have itchy trigger fingers.
Yeah, most definitely. Let's talk about the... Mark, how much time do we have? Because I don't want to interrupt this, huh? We're going to take a break? Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take some calls, talk more with my co-host on The Inside Scoop. We're talking about the George Zimmerman trial. Do you think a guilty verdict for second-degree murder, a guilty verdict for manslaughter, or a not guilty verdict at all? Something else I want to ask you, but I'm going to save it for after the break. I'm Leslie Marshall. Join me and my co-host Mark Levine on this portion of The Inside Scoop. Tuesdays, and next week we move to Thursdays, hour 2. Our number again, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
10 things face to the sky, my back to the wall, my white flag high. Head lips just like a gun, she's got silver bullets on her tongue. He's deep under her spell, I'm screaming
okay,
now,
Marky,
but it
Mark
just won't help. I think I'm cursed, I have faced.
Oh. As long as it's not Taylor Swift. No, I didn't think it was. Anyway, I like her. I like her. Now
yeah, and the song Put the Gun Down, so I thought it was good for this.
Yes, topic. I like it. I like it. Anyway, my co-host in this hour. Hey there, America. I'm Leslie Marshall's Mark Levine, my buddy and co-host of the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Every Tuesday, normally now moving to Thursdays next week, hour two. Let's get to it. We are talking about George Zimmerman, the trial, and what the outcome will be, your predictions, your comments. Mark, let's take some calls. Sound good?
Sure.
Okay, let's go to Dave in Spokane, Washington. Dave, good evening. Thank you for joining us. What do you think about the trial thus far?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Well, let me just say, I think there was actually, in my opinion, some prosecutorial misconduct for even bringing this case. You can see what they had to go through to even bring it. You had to bring in a special prosecutor. Nobody wanted to bring the case from the beginning. And if you just look at the facts of the case from both sides, I mean, there's so much to defend or to support self-defense. Quick background for me is while I was in the Marine Corps as a pilot, one of my other duties was investigating accidents and mishaps of any sort. So I went to the Naval Postgraduate School for investigative training, and I'm very familiar with piecing together facts and timelines. So I can tell you, I've gone through this thing. The timeline itself even really matches up really well with Zimmerman's statements. There's about a one-minute span there right at the time of the altercation where it's a little bit you have to expect maybe there's a long fight, but the rest of the timeline all fits perfectly.
Mark?
Well, my question really is how will this all begin? See, what I think is going to happen is going to be a verdict of imperfect self-defense. So I partially agree with you that there was self-defense, but I think they'll find it's imperfect because the question is who instigated this? And there's a reason why Zimmerman didn't use the stand-your-ground defense in Florida. He waived it. He says it's because I wanted to go to a jury. I don't believe that at all. I think he didn't use it because you can't start a fight and then claim you're standing your ground. I think that based on the 911 tapes, I think Zimmerman started the fight. Now, it may well have gone badly, and it may well be that at one moment Trayvon Martin got the better of him, and then who knows what happens, and there was a gunshot. There's also a question.
Mark, hold that thought, sweetie. Sure. Dave in Spokane, hang tight. We'll come back to you, too, and if you're holding, don't go away. My co-host is Mark Levine. This is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Normally every Tuesday is Hour 2, moving next week to Hour 2 Thursdays. We're going to take a break and be back. We're talking about the George Zimmerman trial and what you think the outcome will be, guilty or not guilty. If it's guilty, murder 2 or manslaughter. We'll be back. Leslie Marshall, welcome to the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show with my co-host Mark Levine. Every hour two on Tuesdays, moving as of next week to hour two on Thursday. You can join us in this and every hour at 888-653-7543. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Tweet us there. And also you can follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk to tweet him during this hour. Let's go back to the phones, Mark. We were talking with Dave in Spokane. Dave, hang tight because Mark is going to respond to what you know you said before the break. And Mark, I'm sorry that I had to cut you off. We did have to go to a quick break there. But I did want you to talk about the timeline which Dave addressed with regard to Zimmerman, which, Dave, you feel really lines up with what Zimmerman has said. And Mark, you wouldn't agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. Well, I heard Mark say something really quick I wanted to clarify. When he said he thought that Zimmerman was the aggressor, I just need him to clarify. Is he talking because he was following, or does he think he actually, like, threw the first punch?
Mark?
Look, I wasn't there. Part of the problems with reasonable doubt is that you have to guess at those things and those kinds of things a jury is supposed to find for the defendant. I'll tell you this, if this were a civil trial, I'm quite confident that George Zimmerman would be found liable. You don't say the word guilty, you say liable, and to have to pay for damages, for wrongful death damages, because I think the evidence is 51% that Zimmerman threw the first punch. But it may not be beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a weird idea. idea to me that Trayvon Martin, who is looking to go home and has armed with nothing but Skittles and Arizona tea, is going to attack this man. There may have been a verbal confrontation preceding it. It's really hard to know exactly what happened, but I don't see the motive for Trayvon Martin to begin the aggression. I do see the motive for George Zimmerman to begin the aggression. What happened afterwards is where it gets to be imperfect self-defense, because while I do believe Zimmerman began it, that doesn't mean that he got the better of Martin, and it may well be, particularly based on the testimony of the neighbor, I think John Good was his name, it may well be that Trayvon got the better of him at one moment. And then the question of imperfect self-defense is, if someone is attacking you, you are required, if possible, to retreat or do things that are less deadly. You're not supposed to, if somebody punches you, okay, you can't just shoot them. That would be an escalation. You could punch them back. That's sort of how self-defense works. And one of the things that I don't really understand is if Trayvon Martin was on top of George Zimmerman, the way John Good says, remember, he only saw it for 8 or 10 seconds, pummeling him, it seems to me if you're on top of a guy, you're going to feel a gun in the waistband. How could Zimmerman get the gun if he was immobilized? You know, how could he get the gun first before Trayvon Martin would get the gun first? So to me, he wasn't fully immobilized, and if he wasn't fully immobilized, he could have retreated. So I got real questions about all of that.
Okay,
Dave, go ahead.
Is my turn?
Yeah.
I got a lot to cover there. First, the motive for Trayvon could be nothing more than just think of a movie. You looking at me? Are you looking at me? You know, a little bit of that when I was a teenager, 17, 18, I had a little bit of that in myself too. I could talk about straightly the timeline, but I wanted to hit on something else really quick because it goes to what you're trying to say with who you think threw the first punch and who was where. One thing that really nobody has brought up very succinctly that I noticed by listening to Rachel Gentile's testimony, and you combine that with Selma Bejador's testimony, Rachel says specifically that that Trayvon Martin told her that he was at the back of his daddy's fiance's house, that general area, and she said, you need to keep running. He said, no. A little time goes by, and she starts doing her hair. 30 seconds or so into doing her hair, she hears Trayvon say, he's behind me. Now, you could jump to a conclusion and say that means he's right behind him, like going to start a fight. However, right after that, she also states that after she hears that, she hears Trayvon moving. She can hear sounds in the mic, and she thinks he's like jogging or moving away or running or doing something again. About 15 seconds after that is when you hear, why are you following me for? Well, now you put that together with Selma Bejador's testimony, hearing movement from left to right, running on like sneakers on concrete, and guess what? In about 15 seconds, 18 seconds, you can go 264 feet at 6 miles an hour. A 6 minute pace, 6 minute per mile pace. That's not a sprint, but it's not a walk either. So he had plenty of distance to cover in that much time that she said that sounded like he was moving. He could easily have gone the distance from his dad's fiance's house to the location where the altercation occurred. It all lines up perfectly to say that he was moving his way towards the altercation, making him the aggressor. What say you?
Dave, I give you lots of credit for having watched this, and admittedly more detail than I have, because I haven't seen every instant of testimony, and it sounds like you have, so I'll give you that. Let me ask you this. Who said, why are you following me? Who said that?
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin
said
that. Why would the aggressor be followed? It seems to me that the person doing the following was Zimmerman. Zimmerman was following Martin. Can we agree on that? Zimmerman
exactly,
was following
yes.
Martin? Okay. If Zimmerman was following Martin, particularly after the 911 operator told him to go back to his car,
that's
don't
not
check
exactly
this
what he
out,
said, but go ahead.
We've got this handled, then it seems to me Zimmerman was, as I put it, looking for trouble. Again, I don't know who threw the first punch. I wasn't there. You weren't there. Trayvon Martin is dead,
yep.
And Zimmerman has every self-serving reason to have his attorneys suggest that Trayvon Martin threw the first punch. I don't know who did it, but to me the confrontation is there because Zimmerman was looking for trouble, and that's the instigation that I'm talking about.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that, and this is, again, based on my experience, putting facts together, the timeline I put together is the only one that fits with all the facts. That includes Bejador's testimony of left-to-right movement and everything else. And that all indicates, especially when you put it in the timeline of what Gentile was saying about her specific conversation, it lines up perfectly for Trayvon Martin to be moving from his dad's house. And, again, it's the whole, hey, you're looking at me syndrome of, this guy is following me. I'm going to go tell him, you know, what do you think you're doing following me? And, yes, that's a speculation, but it also happens to line up with the testimony that we know. And so
I don't dispute your timeline. I'm not talking about the timeline that, you know, the minutes line up.
Yeah.
My question really was who was following who and who instigated what.
Yeah.
And so that's where I dispute you. I don't dispute, you know, that the timeline's correct.
Well, and the whole thing, too, you have to take into account when you said that if you're trying to break away from the fight, then you have self-defense if they won't let you break away. That's part of your argument. You know, that's a part of self-defense. Well, the problem is, with your standpoint, if you have Zimmerman on the bottom screaming for about a minute, because we have 45 seconds of screaming based on a 911 call alone, and you can reasonably assume it was a little bit longer than that, so let's say a minute of screaming, that can be taken as trying to get away from the situation. And if the assaulter will not let you away from the situation, that puts you right back in self-defense.
How could he have grabbed a gun if he was immobilized?
I'm also a gun carrier. I'll tell you, I have a Sig Sauer, similar to Zimmerman's, has a round in the chamber, and it does not have a manual safety, the same kind of safety mechanism as his. And I can tell you, it's
you know, I'm
side.
So scared of guns, you just talking like that scares me.
Hey, I'm from the military. I was in the Marine Corps. Guns.
I know. Thank God for people like you, because people like me, we definitely wouldn't have the freedoms and the safety we do now, because I'm a big wuss when it comes to weapons. I'll admit it.
Remember,
Zimmerman
was rejected.
The less people that are familiar with guns, even seeing one scares them, and they think, oh, my God, I don't want to.
Yeah, let me ask you this. I'm a white chick, but I do have an understanding, not from the perspective of a black man, but I do have an understanding based on my nearly a quarter of a century as a talk show host and my callers and what black men feel and have described to me that they feel and endure being racially profiled everywhere, whether it's by cops, whether it's by a person at 7-Eleven or in a neighborhood like George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman had a gun, and George Zimmerman claims that he killed Trayvon Martin in self-defense. Why is Trayvon Martin being painted as a bullying, violent thug when this is a black kid being questioned by a Hispanic man? And I lived in South Florida. There's a lot of tension between blacks and Hispanics, and not just in South Florida, here in Los Angeles where I live. And why isn't it understandable that somebody would try and defend themselves with the only weapon they have, and it's not the sidewalk, as the defense attorney would state? It was his fists. Why is that so? You know, listen, if somebody has a gun and I'm scared, I'm going to fight for my life. So why doesn't anybody, you know, bring up the idea that Trayvon Martin was defending himself against George Zimmerman?
No, I have heard that argument, and I totally understand. I have had many black friends, especially in the Marine Corps, and I know some of, you know, of what you're talking about.
Dave, and I have multicultural in my neighborhood, but most of the people in my neighborhood are white. Or actually, most of the people in my neighborhood are Armenian. I guess that counts as white. But seriously, if you're in an all-white neighborhood and you're a white guy and somebody stops you, it's going to feel entirely different. And this isn't even an all-white neighborhood. This is George Zimmerman just going, there's a black kid with a hoodie walking through shrubs. One of my friends at Fox, who's not even a conservative, said to me he shouldn't have been wearing the hoodie. I said, I can't believe you just said that, and we're friends.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. The clothes, I think, is ridiculous. What I agree with from Zimmerman's standpoint is that it does seem odd, and I would even take it as odd. And I've had crime in our neighborhood as well, and we've got a few, you know, active neighbors in our area that we will keep an eye on somebody if it seems like they're driving real slow looking for a place to rob. And we'll keep an eye on them. All I'm saying is that if you're walking kind of slow without really seemingly a point to where you're going, like to get into your house and out of the rain, it does seem a little out there. You know, why are you kind of just wandering around in the rain? So just that on its own, not being even black or whatever, is a little bit off. And I just have to say, with what you said about how black people have been profiled for a long time, they feel a little bit of resentment. That also goes to the fact of, hey, what are you looking at me? You're looking at me. It goes to the point of being fed up with this kind of thing and saying, you know what? I'm going to run over and ask that guy, what you following me for? And that goes to the point of being
Leslie,
a little
bit upset. I jump in for a minute?
Yes, absolutely.
Jeff, my name is, I'm sorry, Dave. Oh, Dave. Dave, I'm sorry. I was just listening to you for a while. This is Mark, the producer. I just had a question about what you just said. How do you know he was walking aimlessly? I mean, Zimmerman, the man who killed him, said
Wait a minute. He wasn't walking aimlessly.
He was looking for the apartment where his father's fiancée
Wait a minute. His father's fiancée, he was also there with his girlfriend. His girlfriend's little boy is who he was getting the Skittles and the soda for, by the way, not for himself. So he was going to get this for his girlfriend's son, right?
Yeah.
He was going back to the apartment and taking a shortcut. Hello, if any of us have done going back, whether it's home to a friend's house, the place we're staying at, that may look aimlessly to George Zimmerman.
Yeah.
But don't you think that if you have a mindset, and perhaps even a racist mindset, okay, black kid, my neighborhood up to no good because we've had some robberies lately, wearing a hoodie, cutting through the bushes, and he knows from his training not to follow. He knows from the police, don't leave your car.
Oh,
don't follow them. I mean, the list just goes, to me, the list
and the
just
other
goes
thing
on
is,
and
Dave
on.
Said that, you know, he's comparing that he had training, Zimmerman had training. Well, Mark Levine brought up something that I think he got cut off saying, with March, you can expand. Didn't Zimmerman not get there? He failed some training?
Zimmerman was rejected. Remember, he was trying to be a cop umteen times. He was rejected.
No, he's rejected as a cop, but he has training as a neighborhood watchman.
Yes.
By the way, Dave, you're a military current or former military man, correct?
Former Marine, yes.
Okay, former Marine.
But once
okay.
Marine, always Marine. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Three of them, gorgeous Marines, saved my butt over the week after the Benghazi shootings when I was at the embassy in Dublin. Just had a great time with those guys. And I have a cousin who's a former Marine. Dave, Marines. Military and police, when you're trained with a gun, you're trained to shoot to kill, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Would you agree that Mr. Zimmerman, when he has a fight with two fists and he has a gun, didn't have to shoot to kill?
I agree, except that this is the thing. We keep talking about the gun, when saying Trayvon Martin was getting into a fight, and if I was fighting somebody with a gun, I'd do everything I could. That's assuming that he knew Zimmerman had a gun at the beginning of the fight. This right here is assumption, but I do believe that Zimmerman was on the ground and they were in the melee before anyone.
Dave, Zimmerman didn't go from his car to the ground. Trayvon Martin, there's no reason to just bring him to the ground. None of us.
Like, exactly.
And Mark Levine says,
there's no motive.
All I can say is my opinion is, hey, you. And, you know, and he turns around and he's like, what? Why are you following me? Like, why are you bothering me? And that is the exact tone that the witness stated. He said, and of course, we weren't there, right? And we hope that all witnesses are being honest on both sides here, 100%. We really don't know who yelled for help. Each mother said it was their child, okay? And I'll be honest, I would lie for my kid upside down another on a witness stand. Forgive me, but I would. I'm being honest. And my kid could be Jeffrey Dahmer, and I'd be like, no, I did not see him chewing on that elbow, you know. And
and
I'm awful, huh? But the bottom line is, you know, we don't know, you know, who was yelling for help. We don't even know who was necessarily on top. And just because the person's on top doesn't mean they started out on top, whether it's Zimmerman or Trayvon. And I just find it hard to believe that Trayvon turns around to start smacking this guy. George Zimmerman had to be close enough. I mean, arms are only so long to box, you know? Dave, you were awesome. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take some more calls. We could talk to Dave all night. Dave, you better call again. You'll be our Spokane Marine, okay? Giving you a title on the show. We'll take a break. My co-host is Mark Levine. In this hour, the inside scoop of the Leslie Marshall Show. Don't go away. We're back. My co-host in this hour, Mark Levine. I'm Leslie Marshall. This is the Inside Scoop portion of the Leslie Marshall Show. Coming up next Thursday, hour two. Currently, this is our last Tuesday, hour two, for this segment, the Inside Scoop of the Leslie Marshall Show. We'll be doing it next Thursday together. Mark, let's take some more calls and let's
before
go.
Before we do, Leslie, yeah. Let me just do one, since we're doing these things each week. I just want to do a quick update. Last week, we talked about the prisoners force-fed at Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to let the listeners know, if they didn't know, that the case went up to a judge, and she made a very interesting ruling. She ruled that she had no power to stop it because it was under the power of the military, but she said, I know one guy who does, and that's the President of the United States. She ruled in her ruling that while she could not stop the force feeding, President Obama could, and because President Obama has spoken, you know, saying he wanted to close Guantanamo Bay, she put the ball squarely in his court. It'll be very interesting to see what President Obama does.
Actually, Jay Carney today said that the President is, and they were very silent about this, but they are supporting the force feeding because they don't want them to die, which I was very shocked at. But yeah, the President.
Yeah, I disagree. Just wanted to follow up for those who hadn't heard what we talked about last week.
Thank you.
The follow up point.
Go ahead. Let's go to Linwood in Virginia, talking about the Zimmerman trial. Linwood, thank you for joining us. What do you have to say about this, buddy?
Well, thank you, Leslie, for inviting me on your very wonderful show. I listen every evening.
Oh, thanks, Linwood.
Schoolwork. I want to say this because I've been hearing a lot of talk on the grapevine about possible race riots in the streets if this case does not go in the favor of the Martin family. Now, as an African-American male, I will be happy to speak on this subject. I strongly believe that race riots in the country will possibly not do much, but I think it will really, really call into the attention that's actually in the country at this very moment. It will call to the attention that, yeah, there is a division amongst whites and blacks, and I strongly believe that sooner or later, these two groups will not be able to live together in a fashionable society. It has tried, it has failed. And you're going to, and you know, I'm not talking that integration has failed, but it's failed us as a whole. And the only way we're going to really solve this problem is if one or the other controls the economical, the cultural, the social, even the judicial power of the country. And let's really be honest here. Yes, we've tried very hard to establish in this country a multiracial, multi-ethnic culture. But once again, my friend, and I love you dearly, it's failed. It has not worked with the Palestinians or the Israelis. It's not going to work here.
Can I comment on this?
Yeah, I would like you to. Linwood, hang on for a sec. Go ahead, Mark.
Linwood, look, no one cares about racism or talks about it as much as I have. I was a token white guy on Black Talk Radio. Racism is, I think, the most important problem in America throughout our history. All you have to do is look back to slavery and Jim Crow and all of that. If you've heard me talk on Leslie's show, you know how I feel about the Voting Rights Act and all of that. But to give up entirely based on one jury, whatever those six women decide, juries are imperfect. They sometimes come to the wrong decisions. I think a conviction of manslaughter is warranted, but it may well be not guilty. And a race riot helps no one, and it certainly helps the rioters the least.
Often they burn down their own neighborhood. Mark, I'm glad that Linwood brought that up, because I was going to ask you about that. That does go through the jurors' minds, obviously, when making a decision. And I have heard today that the Broward County Police Department are bracing for a riot in light of a not guilty verdict. Don't you think it behooves the African-American community not to riot, because there are some in communities, whether African-American, Hispanic, white, etc., in South Florida, who are expecting this, and it just looks bad for the black community if they do that, because then anytime somebody who the public may feel is guilty is found not guilty, we feel there'll be riots. We saw it with Rodney King in L.A. We certainly don't need to see that if Zimmerman is acquitted in South Florida.
Well, listen, if it goes to the jurors' minds, it might, but they're going to be instructed by the judge absolutely not to let that happen, and we don't want that to happen. We don't want jurors to decide based on things that go outside the courtroom. We don't want that, whether the defendant is white or black, guilty, whatever they are. Jurors should not let that cause them a concern. They just shouldn't. I mean, maybe they will, but they're not supposed to. And let me just say this about riots.
We're out of time. God. Anyway, thank you. My co-host, Mark Levine, thank you to all our callers. I'm sorry that hour just flew.